Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
All right, welcome back to the Performance Baseball Podcast. We are here today with Tanner. How you doing, Tanner?
Not too bad. How about yourself?
Doing good. How are you doing, Josh?
Yeah, doing well. Doing well. Man, I'm actually doing really well after that Thunder win last night.
Yeah.
That Thunder win. Did you guys see that?
Comeback.
It's crazy.
Oh, my gosh. That was nuts. Wild. What, second biggest comeback since, in, what, 97 or 90s, yeah, or something like that?
Yeah.
29 points. I think I fell asleep at the very end, but then woke up when they won in overtime.
Well, and I wondered, like, once Ja Morant got hurt, I wondered if they were going to be able, if Memphis was going to be able to hang with them. And I thought OKC was capable of coming back. I just wasn't sure if they would, if there was enough time.
Yeah.
But they pulled it off. It was crazy.
Yeah, there was a moment where they just kept missing shots. I was like, is the Thunder just trying to get a big gap, you know? Like, I don't know.
Seriously.
Like, there was brick after brick after brick, and then suddenly, you know, who's the 7 foot?
Chet.
Yeah, yeah. Started draining all those threes, yeah, and was like, okay, here we go.
Caught on fire.
Here we go. All right.
He had a terrible first half and a really good second half.
Started draining threes. Yeah, man, that was a crazy win.
Shea finally got his shooting stroke back, I think, a little bit.
Yeah,
last night,
absolutely.
So that helped.
Sometimes taking all that time off, you know, like I think before they started the postseason, I think it was like they had like a week and a half off before, like,
right
when they previously played. So, you know, got to get your legs back a little
bit. Well, and
so,
if they end up sweeping, they're going to have the same situation.
Same situation. You're exactly right.
Oh, gosh.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was kind of wondering if maybe they were just going to lose a game on purpose so that they could close it out at home.
I mean, it would be good for the NBA, you know. They'd rake in some more money off of that. But,
I don't know if it's always – I mean, it's good having that rest, but I don't know if it's always good having, like, that week and a half off, though, you know.
Yeah,
competitive play, especially in the postseason.
It's always rest versus rest.
Yeah.
Like, what's more important for
your
team.
Exactly.
Crazy stuff. Well, go Thunder.
Yeah,
yes,
and we were just debating whether or not we're going to try and play this weekend. We've got rain in the forecast. We're struggling to get these tournaments in, man.
You're not lying there.
It's kind of driving me crazy.
I know. It's been wet and wild, man. And I hate that, like, it comes out to the last minute. Hopefully directors get all the information out earlier, you know, sooner than later.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than waking up at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. and then finally realizing that you canceled. Like, you know, like.
Then you can't go back to bed.
And then you can't go back to bed.
I'm already up.
And, of course, Tanner, you and me are in the same tournament.
Yep.
I got scheduled at 8 a.m., so, I mean.
Yeah, we
got to be up early.
Oh, he got the bad times.
Hopefully.
I got the back-to-back, and Josh has to just hang out there for all
8-1.
Oh, that's rough.
You coaches, you know. Yeah, everyone knows about that. You know, when you get the terrible schedule.
See, I've got 12:30 and 2:15. So
that's
those
nice.
Are like,
oh, yeah,
those are money spots.
Those are good.
And
yeah,
you're Tulsa, so that gives you time to get up there.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's awesome. That's a good time.
Yeah, those are good times.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, yeah. Well, here we are. We're back with Tanner Lawrence. Today, we're actually going to dive in to some team physical training, all the physical side of things. If you haven't heard our last episode with Tanner, we talk a lot about mental, like the mental side of the game with performance anxiety, how to overcome it, just kind of like the background on that. So if you haven't had a chance to go check it out, scroll back, check out that episode. But today we're going to be talking all about physical training. So, yeah. Tanner, we'd love to hear kind of like your backstory. I know you're in Oklahoma, you know, native, growing up in the Tulsa area. Like, what was it like growing up out here?
Yeah. So grew up, went to Jinx High School, played baseball, football, a little bit of hockey growing up. Ended up playing 2 years of junior college baseball at Seminole State after I left Jinx. After I left Seminole, my sophomore year was my COVID year. So the year after that, year after COVID, I went to UCO. Pitched there for 2 years as well, and then actually in the middle of my, I guess it would have been my senior year, ended up interning up here at Riley Sports Performance, and I've been here ever since.
Awesome.
So, that's awesome.
Yes, sir.
So what did you get your degree in at UCO?
Kinesiology, so exercise science.
Awesome.
Yes. And so,
awesome.
And that actually my supervisor when I was at UCO, she recommended RSP to me, and so I was like, came up here, kind of checked it out, and I was like, this is just perfect right up my alley. Yeah. So, I was like, can't really fit much better in this. So.
Yes.
Was the internship part of your degree program, or was that just
correct.
Something
that was my capstone.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Cool.
So.
Yeah, and Tanner was a fantastic intern, and I mean, yeah, I'm just gonna say Tanner was a fantastic intern. So I mean, we had to give him the opportunity to come on full time and you know, coach, and he's one of our strength coaches and also one of our baseball coaches as well.
Yes, sir.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I mean, when you were going into the kinesiology department, like, what did you want to do? Did you want to get into physical training? What did you want to do with kinesiology?
Yeah. So initially, When I first started kinesiology, I was thinking strength conditioning was going to be 100% what I wanted to do. And now I still love the strength conditioning aspect, but I'm thinking more towards the ACSM cardiac rehab part of it.
Oh, wow.
Which I still love, obviously, you know, strength conditioning, but I don't know if I want to do it like at the college or professional setting as of right now.
Yeah.
After I blew out my shoulder, it's been tough to, you know, get really back into lifting heavy and doing stuff like that. So I guess pretty much after that, I kind of more geared towards, you know, the cardiac rehab side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, you know, I've been doing strength conditioning and I love doing it with this age. But not too sure if I'm looking to do that, you know, at the college or, you know, potentially, you know, high school, professional level, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So right now I'm more geared, still working towards my ACSM certification, cardiac rehab, hopefully be working in hospitals sometime in the next, you know, year or two.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
That's fantastic.
So
that's fantastic. So I know you mentioned, you know, you injured your shoulder when you were playing.
Yes, sir.
So what did that rehab kind of look like?
It was brutal. So I'd say I probably came back a little bit too early. Now my shoulder, it feels good when I throw now. Obviously, if I still lift anything heavy overhead, it gives me a lot of problems. Just, you know, a lot of pain, a lot of, you know, popping and stuff like that. But when I first, my recovery coming off of it, I'd say I probably had PT for 2 or 3 months nonstop, but it was just to the point where, you know, I'd started throwing 8-9 months off of my labrum when I got it repaired, but it'd be every single day, like, you know, pick up a baseball and it would just kill to throw. And so I, you know, I got two PRPs in it, PRP injections, I got two cortisones, and nothing really helped. And so, you know, it was like waking up every day, and, you know, it makes you not want to, you know, play in a sense, because, you know, you're just playing with pain every day. And it's like, you know, when you're a guy that, like, when I went to UCO, I was, you know, 89, 91, my fastball. And then, you know, post-op, I'm 82, 83. And it's just like, you know, you're a shell of yourself, you know. And then, you know, like we talked about it previously, but the mental aspect, and then, you know, your body's feeling bad, and, you know when to hang them up. I'm not going to be the guy that's going to try and hang on to it. It's like, I ain't got the juice that I once did. So time to hang it up. But, you know, I still love being with, you know, all the athletes, still love the game, obviously. And what I like, you know, applying myself to, you know, the kids that we have working out here is, you know, all the dumb stuff I did growing up that probably injured my shoulder. You know, obviously I was a pitcher, but a lot of that probably was me doing super heavy overhead stuff and not lifting correctly, and also having, you know, very, you know, not having good mechanics at all growing up. And I think that kind of contributed to my shoulder, you know, having issues. And so it's nice, you know, like having guys that, you know, have, you know, I see guys coming here and they kind of had like similar mechanics that I used to have. And it's a lot of, you know, upper body dominant when they're pitching, not really using their lower half.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I try and tell these guys like, hey, we got to make adjustments now before, you know, you're a 13-year-old now, you're going to be fine. But as your arm starts, you know, you get bigger, stronger, more velo, that's just going to be more and more strain. So it's trying to correct those, you know, trying to correct their mechanics now. So, you know, when they do get older, they don't have those issues.
Gotcha.
How do you train the lower half? I mean, what are some strategies that you use to engage the lower half more?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I felt like kind of was my biggest issue growing up was like my lead leg block. And so just having stability over my lead leg when I'm pitching. So a lot of times when, I mean, you could see, I still have videos on my Twitter and stuff, but like when I was, especially my freshman year at Seminole, you could see every time, like, I'd finish, I'd be falling off the mound, right? So I didn't have any stability over my lead leg. And so, honestly, when I got to UCO, Jacob Evans was my pitching coach. He's at Pitchworks now, and he helped my mechanics so much, getting that stability over my lead leg, you know, learning how to properly stay in my legs and not leak out and, you know, stay in my back leg. You know, coaches will say, you know, stay in your back leg, stay in your back leg, and, you know, like, I'm the guy, you got to kind of show me it, right? Like, you can't just say something and expect someone to figure it out.
Right.
And so for me, like, he gave me a lot of drills when I was at UCO my junior year, and those drills, I was like, boom, it clicked. And so, especially coming back from my rehab shoulder-wise, what I realized was if I tried to throw my old way, my arm would kill, right? Mm, so when I yeah. learned my new mechanics and I started to throw, I was like, wow, my shoulder actually doesn't hurt that bad anymore. And it's like, well, I wish I would have, you know, got that figured out before I had yeah. my surgery, you know. But
what are some of those drills that you would do?
I mean, I kind of have to show you it. They're very weird drills and they're kind of awkward, but you know, once you do it every day and it's just like practice, a lot of it is like hip shoulder separation too. So for example, as a pitcher, you kind of want your hips to go first and then mm-hmm. let your shoulders and everything kind of whip after. And so for me, like when I look back at my mechanics, I was almost like upper body first and then my hips. So like I was saying, I was very upper body dominant. Everything yeah. was just all arm. And so
it's funny. It's now I'm same, really, it's yeah. the same way with batting too, yeah. right?
It's very yeah. similar, very yeah. similar. And so now like I've gotten a lot better where my hips go first and it's just way less strain on my shoulders. Hmm. So that's the biggest thing. You know, I see a lot of guys where, and younger guys, I don't want them thinking, you know, hip shoulder separation, but you know, you get, you know, I have some high schoolers north and stuff and they have same issues where they'll be here first and then their hips go last. And it's like, you know, you got more velo in the tank and you're so upper body dominant. Like, yeah. let's try and get those hips to go a little bit first. And you probably see like, you know, Dak Prescott do those funny drills where he's doing right, you know, like the Dak right. dance, but that's exactly yeah. That's what he's working on, right?
Yeah.
I've seen Josh Allen talk about it. A lot of those quarterbacks, they do a lot of the similar drills that pitchers do, right? And it's trying to have those hips go first and then let, you know, the upper body whip right after. So, you know, it applies to a lot of guys that throw overhand. So
I've even seen where you can do some resistance, like attach bands to the belt
mm-hmm.
and oh, yeah. you could attach it to the back hip mm-hmm. and either have it pulling to the front so mm-hmm. that you can get that back hip pulling in and you yeah, can you know, and have it stretched out to the back side of the mound too mm-hmm. and
it's like just, the Pro Velocity belt. I've seen that. Right, I don't know if yeah. you've seen that online, the Pro Velocity belt.
No,
those are really, really cool
too. I would just grab the J bands yeah. and clip it to their
yeah.
belt.
Yeah. That's true.
That's awesome.
I haven't done that with any of my 10U pitchers, but I did it with my oldest son when he was really into pitching and he was having those same kind of issues of getting those hips around. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that works too.
Yeah. And so the biggest thing, like what really made sense to me when I was at UCO talking about mechanics was like, you know, trying to think like you're trying to keep your back knee over the rubber as long as you can. So even when you're going down, you're trying to keep that back knee over the rubber. So because if you do that, that means you're staying in your back leg, right? So that's yeah. the, you know, stuff like that and doing drills like that. It just, I don't know, it clicked. But that was the biggest thing that I try to work with my guys as well. You know, yeah. talking about using your legs and, you know, using your body efficiently.
Yeah, so. It's definitely fun, you know, when you get to that, when you're working with pitchers at a certain age, because they're able to understand. I feel like 12, yep. 13, like that's usually when they're like, oh, yeah, clicks. I understand where that hip, you know, where I could fly it. But like,
yep.
when you start getting to the younger, it's just like, no, let's just put you in a really controlled exactly. position to feel, but we're not going to get into the science of it.
You're exactly right.
Like, so when did you start doing all those drills? Like, when did you start feeling it? When did you start realizing it? Was it? You said it was after surgery?
I'd say it'd be post-op. I really felt it. Yeah, because when I first got to UCO, I mean, I threw my first bullpen there in June or July, and then I think I probably tore my shoulder 2 months after that. So really Jeez. Before I even got started at UCO, right?
No, I didn't know
And
that.
So I didn't even know my labrum was torn. I went through all fall throwing on it, just thinking, it was fine. Thinking it was fine. And so yeah. like my first couple outings, I threw great, and then all of a sudden it was like – ball was going here, there, everywhere.
Jeez.
And I went back to my pitching coach, Parker Frazier. He's actually the head coach at Bishop Kelly right now in Tulsa. Went back to him, got gunned that December, and I was 80 to 82. Hmm. And I was like, yeah, something's not right.
How'd you know you tore your labrum? Was it?
I didn't. I didn't have any pain.
No pain?
No pain. I mean, I have a high pain tolerance, wow. but no pain.
Gotcha.
Like, it'd start clicking.
It was just wild.
It was clicking, and it was stuff like that. But I was like, it was just everywhere. Yeah, I didn't really feel much pain, to be honest with you.
Gotcha.
Then I got an MRI, and it was completely torn. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
So it's almost like an ACL where you kind of know
no
based on certain moves.
Yeah,
but,
I knew something was up because, like, I've never had, you know,
like
trouble with
issues.
Commanding my
–
yeah, no control issues, and it was just going everywhere. And then
wild.
I got gunned, and I was like – my velo's down
what
10.
What in the world?
Yeah, and I was like, my velo's down 10. And
oh
so then I
gosh.
Got MRI, and it was completely torn. So,
oh, my
wow.
gosh.
Yeah. But it wow. sucks, though, because, you know, you're thrown on it for 4 or 5 months, and everyone's like, this guy sucks. But it's like,
why did we bring him in?
What's this guy that's doing, Tanner? Yeah. This guy can't even pitch in high school right now. It's like,
oh man, yeah, that's awful, yeah. Man.
But
so did you ever come back? Did you ever come back from that to be able to pitch?
Yeah, I pitched. I got medical redshirt that year. Next year I came back, and I believe I had 7 or 8 innings, and then that was it. Yeah. But and I got my fastball back up to like 83 to 85 that next year, but it was still like, it was every time I'd snap a curveball, it would just kill too. So yeah. It was just tough. Yeah. It was tough to compete, and I was trying hard.
Yeah, if you
but
can't
it was
throw
like,
the off speed stuff.
Yeah,
either.
it was just pitching with pain every time, and I love being with the boys. That's the thing I miss the most. Like, obviously you miss playing, but you miss the camaraderie with your teammates and being in the locker room, awesome. And you miss all that stuff. But sure. The biggest thing was like, you're a shell of yourself, and I'm not gonna be the guy that's just gonna be like, oh, let's just keep playing. Like, hang them up. It's fun. There's a time.
Yeah,
I knew that was a time. So
yeah, sports have a fun way of telling you when it's time. It's time.
Yes, and when you don't want to go, when you don't want to be at the ball field that much anymore, and then it's like that's when it's time to let it go. So
like rewinding. So like growing up as a player, as a pitcher, like when I grew up, like weightlifting, training, all that stuff was really nothing. Like there really wasn't weightlifting. We were always told like it was going to make you stiff. It was going to ruin how you play. You're not going to be as loose. Like, did you, I know you're a little bit younger than me, but like, did you have any strength training when you were growing up in like the baseball realm?
I'd say I really started lifting heavy in high school when I was at Jinx. The biggest thing that, because I was a football guy too until my junior year, but really the lifts that we did as football players were the lifts we did as baseball players.
Gotcha.
So it was honestly the complete opposite of how I lifted in college. It was, in high school it was a lot of back squat, barbell bench press, a lot of football workout stuff like that. And when in college it was we did a lot more like front rack squats. We did a lot of front rack squats. We did dumbbell bench press. So a lot of it was just similar stuff, but different variations where it doesn't, potentially, it could potentially injure you.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Just lifting smart in college, where in high school, I didn't know I was lifting incorrectly, but, now looking back on it, it's like we weren't lifting very smart back then, but.
Yeah. And I feel like in high school, you only have so many coaches watching you. It's just, I know sometimes it could be kind of reckless at times. Mm-hmm. So in college, you started lifting a little bit more baseball specific. What did the workouts look like at UC? Or specifically at like Seminole or UCO?
Yeah. Really Seminole, we didn't lift very smart either. It was just like getting big. I need to show you some of those workouts. I was showing one of our guys a couple days ago, but it was like, 10 sets of 10. It was just like insane.
10 sets of 10?
Oh, I got to show you some of these workouts.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, but it's like that sounds overkill. Well, that's probably, you're exactly sounds overkill. Right. That's probably why I got injured too. I'm lifting very smart. But so when I was at UCO, it was awesome. I mean, a lot of the stuff was, I'd say almost everything we did, we'd have at least 3 second eccentric. So a lot of it was like, you got to control the weight, right? And so I remember even when we did lat pull downs, it was 3 second eccentric. Every time we squatted, 3 second or 3 second eccentric.
What does that mean?
On the way down. So, like, if you're squatting, when you're going on the way down, 1, 2, 3, on the
just
way down.
Just going really slow.
Exactly.
Or when
going
the muscle's
slow,
stretching,
Yes, and so that's the eccentrics on the way down. And so we did a ton of eccentric. Pretty much everything we did, it was just about, controlling the weights, not just making sure you can control. And that's why I have a lot of our guys in here, like, go 3 second eccentric, because, they'll do RDLs and they'll just go straight down. It's like, dude, control the weight.
Because,
like, that's how you get hurt, if you're just going down not controlling it, like, that's how you get injured. And so I really do like, the 3 second eccentric, because that guarantees they're going to control the weight, and if they can't control it, then we're going to drop the weight. So.
Because the type of muscle fiber that you're trying to create for a baseball player is qualitatively different than what you're trying to create for a football player.
Correct.
Because a football player, you want smaller, more compact muscle cells, whereas for a baseball player, you want more elongated, stretchy muscle cells. And so you've got to do a qualitatively different workout to achieve that result.
For sure.
Yeah, which is why I like yoga so much.
we did yoga all the time in college.
Yeah.
I love it. Every single, usually every Wednesday at UCO, the whole team. We'd go to the indoor. We'd do our hot yoga.
So yeah, that's awesome. Love it.
That's how you get flexible.
Did you say, I remember you and I talked a while back about like Brian Cain, like all the mental side.
Oh, yeah.
You did a lot of like meditation too.
Jinx? Yes, high school, every single day we'd listen to Brian Cain. We'd have to write, I forgot some of it, but we'd have like a notebook and we'd have to write down stuff that we'd listen from Brian Cain. And then he actually came to an ORU baseball game when I was in high school. And we went ate with him. So we hung out with him for like an entire day. He came and, you know, spoke to our school, everything like that. Obviously went and saw a college baseball game because he helped out ORU at the time a little bit.
Sure.
So he knew their program. But it was cool, you know, just digging into, because he works with TCU a ton. So digging into how they approach their day-to-day at that high of a level.
Yeah.
And, you know, how we can take, you know, steal some of the stuff they do and apply that to what we did in high school in a sense. So I love that.
Is there somewhere we can access, where can we find his stuff?
He has a program online, I believe, that you can buy. He also has a podcast on Spotify, and I think
Brian
Cain.
Yep, Brian Cain.
How do you spell that?
Just how it sounds. B-R-I-A-N and then Cain. C-A-I-N.
C-A-I-N.
Yep.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he's got that.
I gotta remember that.
Yeah, Brian Cain's awesome.
He does really good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. His is a little bit longer. There's also a mental coach. I need to look back on him, but he's the Braves mental coach. He has that are like 30 seconds long. But I would have to look back at him. But anyways, it was like a minute long where it's just like, hey, let's just listen to it. Like I used to sign my 15U team when I was, they're 16 now, but like I used to sign them stuff to listen to.
That's great.
Didn't always work, but
they
wouldn't always listen, but
at least giving them some other resources.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
Exactly.
For
but
sure.
The thing I like about yoga too is it really teaches you to breathe and to breathe through the pain, to breathe through and in the moment and so on and so forth.
It's the most underrated thing in baseball.
Breathing.
That's the most underrated thing in my opinion.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So going back to like the training side of things, when you started getting into like the UCO and Seminole State, did you have any difference between like your in-season and your off-season trainings? Was there any difference?
No.
Or do you recall?
Oh, I'm trying to think. Yeah, I mean, in-season, I remembered like we obviously wouldn't go like as heavy for like as the off-season, but we definitely, you know, in-season, we'd still be in there just as much as we were in the off-season because, you know, like I've seen guys come in here this past week, right? They work out all in the off-season and they, you know, they're coming back from school ball now and they're like, oh my gosh, like I'm so weak. And it's like, well, there's not really a point to lift in the off season and then take all that time off because you're losing everything, right? You want to, not saying you got to, you know, keep going heavy, heavy, heavy nonstop because you don't want to be sore when you play, but you got to keep, you got to maintain the gains that you do have, right? And so like, we had a guy deadlifting. He's like, wow, I'm like, you know, 45 pounds weaker than where I was at this point, you know, months ago. And it's like,
it's wild.
Well, you got to be consistent. It's like, you know, I had a conversation earlier with the kid I had a lesson with. His mom asked me, how many times should he hit a week if he wants to be good? I said every single day. It's the same thing kind of if you're lifting, you know. I'm not saying you gotta do it every single day, but it's about consistency, right?
Yeah,
it's about, you know, stepping stones, you know, building the right habits. And you know, if you do it every single day, you're obviously going to get better, but if you do it every day and then you take some time off and then you're trying to get back into it, that's not, you know, you got to be consistent with your habits. That's the biggest thing.
Consistency is key, and that's with
lifting as well. You don't take time off, you lift. You lift all the time.
Yeah.
Would y'all lift in the
lift differently?
But. Would y'all lift in the mornings or after games or after practices or when were y'all lifting as a team?
It depended on the day. Sundays we'd lift early morning, like 7-8 a.m. Sundays, and then during the season we'd lift right when we got there, so we'd lift in the afternoons. But usually on the weekends we'd be in there early mornings, usually every Sunday, very early. So. That's kind of a way for them to make sure we didn't do anything stupid on Saturday nights as well.
Yeah,
there as early as you can on
keep
Sunday.
The college kids in line.
Oh yeah, they did it for a reason.
They
did it for a reason. You gotta be there early Sunday.
Yeah. What kind of the game day situation like training wise? Did you guys lift at all game days?
We did not lift on game days. No, we did not. Usually, you know, like our at least pitchers at UCO, we'd go out to the field, we'd do our J bands every day, we'd do med balls before games every time, do our plyo balls every time, and then after we did all that stuff, then we'd go and play catch. So that'd be every single day. We do med balls, plyos, and J-bands
before gotcha. Every game. Gotcha, so you implement all those.
And it was actually, and that was position players as well, too.
Gotcha, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Were they different drills for position players and pitchers?
Well, position players, yeah, they wouldn't do as much plyos. They do, like, they do, like, some of their, you know, reverse throws, and they wouldn't even, they'd do reverse throws and then do, like, some of their, like, rockers and stuff like that, just get their arm going.
Gotcha.
Pitchers would do, I mean, they do everything. They do reverse throws, pivot picks, rockers, walking windups. They do pretty much everything. And so we had our whole driveline plan and everything that they'd send us, so we knew exactly what we had to do day to day.
Gotcha.
As well as med balls as well, so we knew our routine.
At what age should kids start doing that plyo ball routine as a warm-up?
I mean, I think any age. You just gotta be smart with how many ounces you're throwing, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah. It just depends on the ounces.
Yeah, definitely not.
I think reverse throws at any age. I mean, I think reverse throws are awesome because,
that's one where you're down on one knee. That's the one I think
at any age, reverse throws are
safe. Down your throwing knee.
Those are the ones safe. Like, I think that's safe regardless. You know, some of the other ones, like, I wouldn't have a 10 or 11-year-old, doing pivot picks with, like, the big, you know, the big green ball. But maybe
baseball weight.
Maybe, like, the purple, which is a 5-ounce, or maybe, you know, if it's a good athlete, maybe the red, which I believe is a 7-ounce. The 7-ounce. So, you know, it depends on the athlete for sure. And if it's a kid that struggles with mechanics and stuff, then I probably won't have them, you know, do plyos. Or if I do, it's going to be a lighter baseball or a 5-ounce. You know, I'm not the biggest weighted baseball guy, but, you know, if, you know, plyos and stuff, like, you just got to be safe with it.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be controlled.
It's got to be controlled. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. If it's not controlled, that's when you run into issues. And that's what's awesome about here is that, you know, we have the programs. We know exactly what we're doing. So,
yeah, like even here at RSP, like there's a time and place where we test with some weighted baseballs, but at the same time, like, it's only usually four throws. Yes. Or not usually, it is.
Yes.
Four throws. Yes. For the overload and the underload. Like, it's not a, I've seen some organizations where they'll go do, like, there's one locally where they'll do, like, man, they'll do hard pull downs with like a 12-ounce ball, and they'll go through long toss, and sometimes it's just like, people are crazy.
Yeah.
People are crazy with youth. Yeah. It has to be definitely a controlled environment. Like, we follow the drive line here. So very similar to what you've done in school. So yeah, I love the drive line program, and there's some people that love it. There's some people that hate it, but I feel like we haven't had that many injuries with it. So,
I know there's a lot of debate out there about kind of our weighted balls destroying young arms. And I would say that, tournament baseball is probably destroying young arms more than weighted balls are, just from a standpoint of overuse. To me, it's just overuse.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got, you know, that that ace pitcher throwing, you know, 175 pitches over the course of a weekend, that's going to do it a lot more than a weighted ball is going to do it.
For sure. And where I think a lot of people get the misconception with, like, weighted balls is, like, when you have young kids throwing weighted balls, like, when they start going into the heavy stuff, all that's damaging the shoulder with weighted balls is when it just forced them into a really, really big layback. It forced their arm way into too big of a rotation, and that's where they start getting either labrum issues or elbow issues, because it just forced them into that range of motion that they're not able to handle yet. So it's all about monitoring. It's all about monitoring where they're at.
Yeah,
and how their bodies can handle it.
Yes,
my 8U boys. I always like to hit in warm-ups with the weighted balls, the yellow ones that are like 14 ounces or something like that.
Awesome.
And I always tell them, don't throw those back to me. Just underhand them. Just underhand them, because I don't want them hurting their arms.
Good. Yeah. Kids are resilient, but there's definitely a limit where you're like, all right, we have to monitor this.
Yes.
We have to make sure.
Yes.
Yeah. So you used plyo balls, used med balls, all that stuff.
Yep, all of that. Yep, and I've been doing that since, I'd say, high school. I just used J bands. I never really gotten the plyos at all, which I probably should have, at least like reverse throws, stuff like that. I was kind of behind the eight ball there. But when I got the Seminole, every single day it's plyos, J bands. We didn't do med balls at Seminole, but it'd be plyos and J bands every single day. And then once I got the UCO, it was plyos, J bands, and med balls as well. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like med balls are one of the like a tool. And I think we were talking about it the other day, is like one of the most underutilized, or like just people don't realize how beneficial throwing med balls into either a plyo wall or a brick wall or to a partner. Like, man, it trains so much rotation.
I think that's the number one thing that can help baseball players.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, everything you do in baseball is rotating, right?
Yeah.
And that's what everything you do with med balls. It's learning how to rotate, be explosive. So,
yeah.
What are some of those movements that you do with the med balls? What are
ones? Scoop throws where you just have your hands under the ball, and it's just like, I just tell my guys, like, when they're in there, just practice like you're hitting. Like, just same lower half, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're not getting your back foot through, you're not getting your hips through. Yeah. Well, that's what we got to do. We got to learn how to rotate. That's the biggest thing I feel like I see with all these guys, is either when they're hitting, they're not getting their back foot through, right? Like, it's not turning, their hips are stuck. And that's I had a guy last week where he couldn't get his hips through, and I just got him on the med ball, and I just rotate. How fast can you know, if I'm facing the cages, how fast can you have your belly button, you know, get to the wall? That's what I tell him.
Yeah.
How fast can you get your hips through? That's everything in baseball. It's your core, it's your hips, that's all your power. Whether you're hitting, pitching, a lot of that's, you know, use it nonstop. So that's the, you know, scoop throws. We do, you know, drop step throws, Happy Gilmore's, everything's, you know, building rhythm, just learning how to rotate efficiently. So that's the, you know, I think that's the number one thing with baseball players, is like how quick and how explosive can you be when you rotate?
Yeah,
so.
And I love using a plyo wall because you get instant feedback on the sound.
Yes.
You use a radar gun if you want to, but like just by hearing that big smack on the wall, like that's when you're like, oh, yeah. I'm moving it.
Loud noises.
Yeah. And I know we don't really use anything, you know, heavier than a 4-pound ball, just because, like, yeah, sometimes more like can help. But like, if you can move a 4-pound ball fast,
yes,
like you're generating power.
Yes.
You know,
you could
definitely throw heavier balls, but it's like, how good a form can you throw a heavier ball? Let's throw a light ball as fast as we possibly can.
Yes, and just rotate.
You could definitely go heavier, but yeah, again, like, good form. Let it fly and hear that smack on the wall, or you know, that's what I love hearing. But okay. So now, like, you switch into like the strength side of things, more of the strength coach. Is there a difference between training older players and younger players? Like, do you see like a difference? Like, I know some of our preseasons is a little different for the younger kids, but what's your thoughts on training older kids and younger kids? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think the biggest thing, obviously, with younger guys is, you know, if you're a guy that's, you know, starting to work out here and you're, you know, 11, 12, you know, maybe even 13 if you're small, is like, if you're having trouble doing, you know, a lot of weight, like I like doing a lot of body weight with a lot of our new guys, you know, just start with body weight, start with kettlebells, start with dumbbells, you know, a lot of our younger guys, they even have trouble, you know, sometimes with the bar and stuff. So it's like, you know, instead of doing that, we'll go to kettlebells, we'll go to dumbbells, we'll use stuff like that. I'd say with my older guys, obviously, it's, we want to put on a little bit more weight, you know, they're about to be in high school. But you know, it really depends on the athlete, and it depends on, you know, the size and how mature they are. Like, you know, we both have 13 U teams. I have a guy that's, you know, almost 6 feet on my team, and I also have a guy that's probably like 5 foot on my team, and they're the same age, right? So the biggest thing really is body type, who is like hit puberty at this point, who hasn't, you know.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing, which, you know, that's the biggest thing I look at, is like maturity, size, how strong you are, stuff like that.
Probably like body awareness too.
Oh, for sure. Body awareness, how coordinated are you? And what's nice is I do know, you know, we work with a lot of these athletes, and so I do know their body types. But what also is nice is, you know, we do assessments, and it's nice, you know, with some of the athletes that we do have, whether it's baseball or, you know, soccer, whatever it is, like, we do know where they do struggle. Like, I had a lady last week where she had really bad external rotation, so, you know, then we'll start programming that. And if she ever has pain, like, oh, I already know, like, you can rotate a lot better left side than your right side. So that's just the biggest thing, I think, is just depends on the athlete, you know, their, how coordinated they are, how can they, you know, move the weight efficiently.
So, gotcha.
Yes, sir.
I would like to know a little bit more about the RISE program that y'all have here. At what age does that start, and what all is involved in that program, and like, what are the goals of it, and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so I believe the RISE program, Josh might have to help me out, is it 12 year?
Yeah, about 12. 12? Yeah, 12,
yeah, so 12 all
12
the way.
Age, yeah,
yeah, 12 all the way, probably through high school. I mean, yeah, 12 all the way through high school. The biggest thing with RISE is, and I love it. It's just making sure that everything is, you know, sport specific. So whether you're a baseball guy, you're going to lift correctly. Like I said, the baseball workouts we do here are very similar to the stuff that I did at UCO. But let's say if you're a football guy, right, those lifts are going to be different. You're probably going to be a guy that does barbell bench. And let's say if you're a basketball player, right, you're probably going to do a lot more plyometrics, you know, being explosive, vertical, you know.
Jumping.
Exactly right. So each sport's different, but that's what I love about Rise is that you're not lifting necessarily, you know, not each athlete is lifting the same. Everything is sport-specific, and it's going to translate to your sport. So.
Does that run concurrently with baseball season, or is that year-round, or what is it?
Year-round. It's year-round. Yes, okay. Sir. Yeah, and so, I mean, we've had tennis players, we've had basketball, we've had football, we've had, you know, every sport, and so everything's different, right? But I'd say, like, you know, tennis and golf, some of those guys, like, it's similar to baseball because, you know, everything's about rotating. But when you get, like, basketball and you get, like, soccer, stuff like that, that's where it varies a little bit for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. So now switching gears, when we're talking about like programming athletes, like, do you think people should be like multi-sport athletes? Do you think the workout should change during the year? I mean, I guess, you know, the workout should be depending on what they're playing that specific season, right?
Correct. Yeah. I'm a big fan of playing multiple sports. I mean, I think what really helped me with, you know, developing my footwork and, you know, everything growing up, my body awareness is playing. Excuse me. was
friend girlfriend.
Yeah, seriously. Gosh. Turn it off. The biggest thing though, I feel like is, you know, I lost my train of thought. Where were we
again? Tanner, we had a lunch date. Where are you at? No,
seriously, train of thought. Where were
I'm
we?
Just kidding.
I know.
I'm just kidding.
Where were we?
Just about talking about multi-sport athletes.
Oh, yeah. And so talking about body awareness, I felt like playing football growing up and, you know, getting the footwork, you know, being on the ladder a ton. We used to do ladders a ton with football. I feel like that really helped me with baseball, you know, being able to – big thing we talk about swings, you know, hitting is having balance when you swing. And I feel like that's something I've always been really good at is like having balance, really good body awareness. And I feel like, you know, playing hockey at a young age, you know, being a good skater and obviously playing football my whole life, I feel like that really helped me develop as a baseball player as well, developing that, you know, those other skills that helped me, you know, with my swing, and it helped me, you know, being explosive, pitching, hitting, stuff like that. So I'm a huge fan of being a multi-sport athlete. I don't think kids at a young age should just play one sport unless that's really what you want to do. Play as many as you can.
It's crazy how many people have specialized. There's some kids that have just completely specialized in baseball or specialized in basketball or whatever. And like, I feel like there's so much more advantage to playing multiple sports just for the body awareness, as a whole. I feel like, playing football, playing basketball, I feel like it's definitely made me a better baseball player in the long run, just because I was learning things on the football field that I didn't normally learn elsewhere. It's good stuff.
Now I would say there are seasons though. Right, like, obviously, like, fall baseball and football, those are going to overlap, and we know that, like, fall baseball is going to kind of take a step back. But, like, if you're trying to play soccer or basketball, like, AAU level, whatever, during baseball season, maybe we're going to have a conversation about that.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, bro, like, this is baseball season. You either play baseball or go play those sports.
That's the truth. Yeah.
You know, when it's spring and summer, to me, that's baseball.
It's baseball.
Oh, absolutely.
You're exactly right. Yep. Yeah, it's baseball.
Yeah.
It's spring, summer's baseball, and then fall's football.
Yeah.
That's how it always was.
That's
so
true. Yeah.
Go play soccer and basketball in the winter.
Yes,
or
true.
Play indoor.
Exactly
yeah.
Right.
I mean, fall is definitely summer. That sticky, like, because, like my team, I think, you know, your guys' team is playing in the fall, but it's like, you know, they play football or they play basketball.
Right.
It's like, okay, you're in season, go play, that's your sport.
Yeah, exactly.
You can miss me, you know, my time for those sports that are in season, but it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah,
they need to go play that. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, fall baseball is all developmental, too. So it should be about you know, getting some extra reps, getting exposure to maybe different positions, things like that. It's a little bit more relaxed in terms of the schedule. I mean, we still want to have an intensity when we're playing games, but...
So you're saying rings don't matter in the fall? I'm just kidding.
I don't know if I'm saying that necessarily.
I'm just kidding.
No, I do think that it is a time when, you know, we as baseball coaches know that it's going to take a little bit of a step back. And that's fine.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So now, Tanner, like being a baseball player, now being a coach, a strength coach, all that stuff. Like, I mean, what's your favorite aspect of being a strength coach?
I mean, my favorite aspect of being a strength coach, honestly, is just making sure that these guys are lifting properly. Yeah. Just making sure that they're being safe, you know, throughout their lifts. You know, a lot of our guys, they do have really good form because they've been doing it consistently.
Yeah.
But, you know, the biggest thing is, like, I remember, like, a lot of examples, but a few weeks ago a guy was going super heavy on front rack squat and he was barely getting down, right? Like, he wasn't getting near, you know, deep enough, and so, or low enough, and so I was like, dude, we got to take off the weight. So it's just making sure that, you know, they're getting as low as they need to be and they're doing the proper weight, right? And we've had conversations about it, like, guys need to push themselves, but, you know, that's the biggest thing. We want guys to really push themselves, but we also want them to do it in a safe, controlled manner as well.
Yeah.
And so that's the biggest thing. And, you know, just what I love is just trying to, you know, be a leader, trying to be someone that these guys can talk to every day.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, talking about lifting or if it's baseball, it's, you know, giving them as much feedback as possible. So.
Yeah. I do love the rise hours here because, like, when you're a rise coach, you just kind of float. You come in contact with every kid that's coming in, yep. Working out. It's just a fun, relaxed environment. Yes, they're pushing each other, but, like, you can float and see. I mean, obviously, fitness is fitness. You have some days where it's booming, some days where it's only one kid, you know. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's so much fun getting to interact and seeing them change week over week or seeing how their week's going or talking baseball.
Yes.
Like, at that age, a lot of them are playing school ball at this time, or they just wrapped up, so it's fun hearing how they're doing on those fields. Mm-hmm. Compared to our fields, you know, if they're a performance baseball kid. Yeah, it's fun stuff.
Yes,
with the Rise program, are y'all like each day giving a prescribed workout, like, this is what y'all are doing today?
For sure.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah. We have all the programs up there, and so
yeah
baseball guys are usually, they'll get started with the same program. I mean, we have stuff for, you know, tennis players, everything like that. So yeah, a lot of the baseball stuff is very similar to what each guy will do. But for example, like, if some guys struggle, like I was saying earlier, if a guy's having, you know, shoulder, or if he has bad external, you know, like Josh was talking about layback earlier, then we'll do, you know, a lot of band work stuff that will help, you know, improve his range of motion, stuff like that. So it varies a little bit depending on the athlete, and how long they've been doing it and how mature they are. So, you know, you scale stuff back. You can sometimes scale stuff up a little bit if they're ready. Depends on the athlete, but I'd say, you know, a lot of the baseball guys, their lifts are pretty similar for the most part.
And I'll go ahead.
I'm real big with both of my teams on body weight movements and body weight exercises at their age, because they're just 8 and 10. Especially with my 8U boys, it's been fun to kind of see them progress from our very first practice and workout, where some of them didn't even know how to do a push up, and like we do push ups as part of our warm up every single practice, every single game, and so now, like, all of their form is much better, and
that's
and
awesome.
They're doing it correctly, and you can see that they're gaining more confidence and strength too. So
are you doing those push ups with them?
Oh yeah, most of the time.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it today. We're good.
I mean, I've got to check that they're doing it correctly too.
Yeah,
right? I
got to
go,
sure,
you know, down the line and make sure.
For sure,
it's like me running the laps when I send my team. I've had my team run pretty much a mile after each practice, and Josh asked me yesterday, he's like, "Have you ran it with them?" I'm like, and maybe the last three laps. I'm not running all of them. Hey, but here's the thing. Though, everything I make these kids do is stuff that I've done.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm going to make you do something that I haven't done when I was a kid. So, you know?
Yeah. Or you may, next time you run, you may go do the six laps with them.
We'll see.
Oh, man. So, like, switching gears to, like, the baseball side of things, what's your favorite thing about being a baseball coach? Because I know you've coached an older group. Now you're with a little bit younger group. What's your favorite spot?
Favorite thing about being a coach, for sure, is just – I just like being a leader. And I just like being an outlet for these kids, and, you know, whatever they need in life, I like being that guy that can, you know, help them out. And so – the biggest thing, obviously, you know, I love the baseball aspect of it, you know, helping them, you know, the nuances and little, you know, tips and tricks that I've, you know, gathered through my playing days. But the biggest thing that I like is just being involved in these kids' lives and being a leader and whatever they need, whether it's, you know, tips for school ball or if they ever need help, you know, with, you know, high school or, you know, even down the line, if they need help, you know, talking to college coaches, you know, I like to be that guy for, you know, yeah, be that leader for them. And that, so that's the biggest thing, is just setting an example of how, you know, how you got to be, you know, if you want to be a successful baseball player, I'm trying to lay out the foundation of what you got to do. So that's awesome. The biggest thing is just trying to be a leader and have these guys, you know, if you don't want to be a baseball player when you grow up, that's fine. But it's about, you know, the biggest thing is being a good person, being a good teammate. That's the number one thing that I enjoy, is like trying to turn these guys from, you know, boys to men. So that's the biggest thing.
I feel like that's the biggest key with coaching, is just leading by example.
Yes.
Fostering that. But also, like, there's just so many things that translate to life, you know, like,
for sure,
if they can't show up and do the things that they're asked, like, they're not going to go very far in life. You know, like, they just have to learn that. They just have to learn that. And that's awesome, man.
Yeah. Showing up and learning to work hard and learning to become the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's a process. I think my favorite kind of baseball player is the one who works their butt off and knows that they're not the best, but is going to show up every single day to become the best that they can be. I think, you know, I would much rather have that kid than the kid who thinks already that they're the best and thinks that they've arrived and, you know, and they're only 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 years old. And it's like, dude, you got a lot of baseball left and a lot of learning to do.
A lot of learning, a lot of life, yes.
And, exactly. Yeah, because a lot of times if you have that kid who already thinks that they are the best, then when they hit those struggles, because they will eventually hit those struggles, they collapse completely under that. So if you can get that kid who's got that growth mindset rather than the fixed mindset, I think that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And trying to ingrain that in the kids as well. Like, for me, it's like, I want to put my, players in tough positions. It's part of why, you know, I like to rotate positions, because I know our second defense or whatever is going to give up some runs. And then that forces our bats, like, okay, let's be resilient. Now let's go hit.
Yeah.
And it builds some stamina. It builds some resilience. Yeah. In those players of, like, we're not always going to have it easy. You know,
absolutely.
It actually happened with my 8U team the other night. We were playing a team that I knew that we could beat. And instead of playing my best players the whole time, I rotated, and we got down big early. So we were down 8-0.
Oh, wow.
To this team that we should have easily been beating.
Yeah.
And I had also flipped my lineup as well. So my lesser hitters were hitting towards the top. We came back and won that game.
Oh, wow.
We shut them down in the later innings, and we came back and won that game 9-8.
Oh, my gosh.
Not before we got down 8-0.
Oh, jeez.
But now they have that mental resilience of, we can come back.
Yeah.
And we can keep fighting. Yep. And like, now that is a memory that is part of their DNA.
Yeah.
Whereas if we had just gone out there and slaughtered them, which we could have done, now there's a different mindset that you've created.
That's the hardest mindset to train. That's the hardest mindset. Like, I've been, you know, we've all been in the dugout where you get smacked by, I mean, let's just say, like, even like 4 runs, and you're just like, and suddenly you look in your dugout and it's like, oh, game's over. Oh, we're losing. Yeah. It's like,
and I heard
4 runs. What?
I heard some of the boys go being defeated and being frustrated.
Yeah.
But then we kept battling. We scored a couple runs, and we scored a couple more. Gosh. And then finally in the last inning, we needed 3 more to win, and we scored 3 runs to win. And it was pretty great.
Man, that's wild. Well, at least, you know, they're stuck with that mind, that thought of, like, oh, man, we can come back, and we have. So that's awesome.
Yeah, that's how fantastic. The boys get brought, you know, bring them closer together. Exactly. Too. Yeah. You know, now it's like, wow, like, we're a team. You know, that they'll remember that for a long time, probably. Yeah. So that's what's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, Adam, do you have any other things you want to?
No, this was good. I think I learned a lot today. You know, in the fall, we really hit the physical training side of it hard during practices. And I've kind of gotten away from that in the spring. And I'm thinking I probably need to bring some of that back a little bit. Especially with my older boys, but even with my younger ones too. Like, yeah, I think your point that you made about it being an everyday thing, like if you want to be a really good hitter, you got to work at it every day. If you want to build that physicality, then you got to work at it every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there was Tom House, pitching coach, like he talked about like should throwers throw every day or, you know, to that point, he's like, yeah, well, don't runners run every day?
Yeah.
You know, if you're a marathon runner, you're going to run every day. So if you're a thrower, throw every day. If you want to get strong, or lift every day. If you want to do whatever, like just be consistent.
I remember hearing an interview with Nolan Ryan, and that's what he talked about was when he was growing up, he just loved to freaking throw the baseball, and he did it every single freaking day.
Yeah.
On top of, you know, throwing hay bales all over the place and a roping cattle and stuff like that. That'll make you strong too.
Yeah.
But I mean, he threw.
If you can throw, Yeah. If you're a thrower, throw.
That's the thing. Like, everyone's like, oh, how do I throw hard? The easiest way to throw hard is to try to throw hard all the time. And eventually, that's how you get your arm faster. So, if you want to throw hard all the time.
Throw
and
hard.
And eventually, your arm's going to get quicker. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's how you throw harder.
I also think.
Better rip every time.
Yeah. I also think underweighted balls are really helpful in that regard, too, of like, throw the wiffle. Go play wiffle ball.
Yeah.
Go play wiffle ball.
Hand speed. And increase your hand
throw
speed.
Throw that wiffle ball as hard as you can to get those guys out when you're playing wiffle ball in the backyard or whatever.
Just make sure you warm up first.
Right. Still do your stretches. Do your push-ups.
Do your bands.
Bring your J-bands to wiffle ball.
Bring your J-bands to wiffle ball.
Oh, man.
That would be awesome.
Bring your med balls. Bring your J-band. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Oh, all right, man.
Well, Tanner, like, thanks so much for everything that you do here at RSP and Performance. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. Hope we get some baseball games in this weekend.
Seriously. Yeah. That'd be awesome. I probably have an update right now.
I mean, it's 1:30. She said she'll be at the fields by 1:30.
We should know soon.
All right. I'm hoping to hear from my tournament director, too.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys. We'll see you on the next episode.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.